Murdoch gets a tighter grip.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Rupert Murdoch is reportedly solidifying his control of News Corp. The Wall Street Journal says he's trading a stake in DirecTV and three regional sports networks to Liberty Media. In exchange, he gets $11 billion in News Corp stock. To sweeten the deal, Murdoch is also forking over $500 million in cash. The media mogul was anxious to regain control of News Corp because he hopes to turn it over to his children one day. The Murdoch family's voting share is now close to 36%. More media news. Google has signed what it says could be its most lucrative deal. The internet search company has forged an alliance with British TV company BSkyB. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Under the deal, Google will help BSkyB develop its new broadband service. That will mean providing subscribers with email, internet phone calls, and user-generated video. This will be the first time that Google will license the software it acquired when it bought YouTube. There is an ultimate prize, say analysts: full-length feature films on demand, delivered swiftly over the internet. Barry Fox of New Scientist magazine says Hollywood will be watching the Google BSkyB alliance with interest.
Of course, Hollywood's long-term aim, wish, desire is to be able to push movies into our home without having to go to all the expense and trouble of pressing them on discs.
Google says it chose Britain as a test bed for its new venture because broadband penetration and speeds in Britain are among the highest in the world. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Seminole Tribe of Florida are the new owners of the Hard Rock Cafe. The tribe reached a deal with Rank Group. This agreement is said to be worth nearly $1 billion. That package includes 124 Hard Rock Cafes, four hotels, two casino hotels, and two concert venues. The holiday shopping season is upon us. Like many retailers, booksellers do good business this time of year. Barnes & Noble is one of the biggest players in the field. Shares of that stock were up yesterday after an analyst suggested the company might be ripe for a leveraged buyout. Elisa Roth has more from New York.
It's been a record year for private equity buyouts. So far, private equity firms have bought nearly 1,000 companies in deals worth more than $300 billion. Part of the surge is that private equity firms are swimming in money right now and looking for companies to buy. There's speculation that Barnes & Noble is an attractive target. That's because it has little debt and generates billions in sales. David Snow edits the trade publication Private Equity International. He says the scenario is a familiar one.
One strategy that private equity firms use is they look for a company that has very strong cash flow, doesn't have much debt, maybe has cash on hand. They'll buy that company, leverage it up, and return a lot of capital to their own shareholders.
Rumors about Barnes & Noble first popped up after a hedge fund bought significant stakes in the bookseller. But Barnes & Noble founder Len Riggio and his brother's CEO Stephen Riggio still own more than a quarter of the company's shares, which means they'll have final say in any deal. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Like a sports team, the market got caught looking ahead yesterday to Friday's employment report. As a result, the stocks generally lost ground. The Dow slipped 22 points, 12,309, and the Nasdaq was off 6 points, 2,445. This is Marketplace. Today, the FDA will review the safety of drug-coated stents. Some studies suggest they could be harmful. From the health desk at WGBH, Helen Palmer reports.
Drug-coated stents are four times as costly as older, bare metal ones, but cardiologists love them because they keep scar tissue from closing arteries up again. Now studies show a small risk of deadly blood clots forming, and that's hurt market share, says analyst Candice Mabubi of Millennium Research.
And instead of around 90%, it's actually more like 84%. So translating to around $200 million in loss in the drug-eluting stent market.
Lehman Brothers analyst Bob Hopkins thinks doctors on the FDA panel will likely suggest longer follow-up studies on these stents and perhaps tougher rules for new products. He thinks prices and usage will fall somewhat, but the stents will still be very profitable. Just don't expect the market to grow at the 10% pace stent makers are forecasting. In Boston, I'm Helen Palmer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, produced by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, committed to providing financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive. Thrivent.com. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Mark Austin Thomas. If you're a fan of University of Michigan football, you're probably not too happy with the bowl championship series right now. After all the computer calculations and polls, the Florida Gators jump past the Wolverines. It will be Florida who faces Ohio State for the national championship on January 8th. It's been almost 10 years since TV networks and the six major collegiate sports conferences dreamed up this system, yet the BCS is still a lightning rod for controversy. David Carter is the executive director of the USC Sports Business Institute. I asked him whether even the TV networks were happy with the system.
I don't think they're precisely happy with it at this point, but you have to understand they were part of creating this. And right now, they too want to see it continue to be refined. There are schools like Boise State, Louisville that are going to be playing in big BCS games this year. Probably not going to be a ratings bonanza for Fox for some of those games. But if you really think about the Rose Bowl and you think about this national championship game that's coming up, this is these are ball games that these networks are paying a lot of money for every year. $30 million is what ABC is paying for the Rose Bowl, for instance, through 2014. So there's a lot of money on the line for these kinds of games. And if there is a true, quote-unquote, true national championship game, people will tune in and everybody will make a lot of money from it. And that's typically what college football is all about.
People complain, I complain, about the 2 weeks between the championship game and the Super Bowl in the NFL. Why do we have to put up with 6 weeks between the end of the college football season and the big game to decide who's number one?
Well, there are a few reasons for that. I mean, it boils down to time and money. First of all, you need to have adequate time between the traditional bowls, including the BCS bowls, and this title game. In fact, there's about a one-week spread between the end of the major BCS games and this title game. You also want to avoid the considerable shadow cast by the NFL. That is, critical as they come to the end of their season and they work their way into the playoffs. And then again, you have an opportunity for advertisers, sponsors, Fox, and others attached to this game, the running room to market and promote their affiliation with the game. So time and money has led this game to slipping, if you will, until January the 8th.
You call this a game, we call this a game. But there's a lot of money involved here, too. The Ohio State-Florida matchup alone is expected to generate $315 million in economic impact. Is it still really a game?
College football is big business, and I don't know that anybody really needs to apologize for that. Fans, alumni, you name it, boosters, everybody on down the line associated with college football loves it. They're spending a lot of time and disposable income on it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think the critical issue is, what does college football collectively do about it as it becomes even a bigger and bigger business, meaning how much of this is going to flow back to student athletes in the form of some sort of support on campus? How much of it is going to go toward finding the right balance between commercialization of college football and matriculating student athletes? That's always been one of the big debates. So to me, as this becomes more about money year in and year out, I think the critical thing is, what's the impact going to be on the college experience, much more so than whether or not Michigan got jobbed by the BCS system this year.
David Carter is executive director of the USC Sports Business Institute. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
We're all living longer and healthier.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.